Blog Talk Radio. The Bernie Sanders Show. That's the show today. Big election last night in Wisconsin. He's doing it, man. He's doing it. He's hanging on. He's pushing through. So I'm going to give you the results of that election, tell you what's next. And also, there's a little bit of controversy slash made-up controversy over an interview that Bernie Sanders gave to the New York Daily News. We're going to really get into the details of that because people are saying, oh, it shows that he's not good with policy specifics. That's your argument against Bernie Sanders, that he's not – all he does is talk about policy specifics. Yeah, but when you really try to get deeper into the details, he doesn't know anything. What? What are you saying? All right, so I'm going to take that head on. All the parts of the interview that are most controversial we're going to talk about. And then we'll see whether or not Bernie Sanders is really up to the task. And then later on in the show, Donald Trump supporters pressed, give me one policy reason why you would support him. Fucking crickets. Can't wait to go after that one. And then later on in the show, John McCain is comparing the war against ISIS to Vietnam. What? So is he right? Wrong? Why not? What's his solution? What's his conclusion? We'll see. It's kind of typical John McCain in some ways. And I guess I'll give you one more tease here. If you smoke marijuana, we have some congressmen who have made some conclusions about you that I'd like to share with you. And we can discuss this new kind of discrimination, which is totally and utterly okay in the minds of some silly people. Okay. Let's get started here after I take a little sippy sip sip of my drink, and I'll give you some election results. So last night we had a big election in Wisconsin, and Bernie Sanders is continuing the surge. So he won with about 56.5% of the vote, and that means that he's still alive in this race, and he picked up some delegates and chipped away at Hillary Clinton's lead. But now moving forward, I think Wyoming is on Saturday. He's going to have to win that, which he most likely will because of the demographic makeup and a bunch of other stuff. But then New York is the real test, my state. So New York votes after that, and the most recent polls in New York have Bernie Sanders down about 10%. He can't afford to lose New York because there's so many delegates at stake in New York, and then obviously after that, you have New Jersey and you have California that has a ridiculous amount of delegates. So what we need to see here is Bernie pull out those victories. Now, think about it. After Arizona, what did the article say? Or actually, it was just before Arizona. What did the article say? Moving forward, Bernie Sanders needs to win about 58% of the delegates. And if he does, then he wins. If he doesn't do that, he loses. So he got himself into a little bit of a hole because the South came first and then all the other states came. Now we're out of southern states. Now it's all Bernie Sanders territory in terms of favorability and demographic makeup of the states. And ever since he had to win about 58% of the delegates moving forward, what has he done? He's won about 58% of the delegates moving forward. In fact, some of his victories have been so crushing that on given nights, his average margin of victory was well over 58%. So he's doing it, man. He's hanging in there and he's fighting through. And obviously, the most important reason as to why he's continuing his success is the people. You know, everybody saw when his back was against the wall against Hillary. Ugh, they don't want Hillary Clinton to be the Democratic nominee. What do we have to look forward to? So people are coming out in large numbers here for Bernie Sanders, and he knows that. He's said it before. We've said it before. This movement isn't about him as much as it's about the philosophy that he represents, which is a philosophy of social democracy, which is basically what most other modern nations on the planet are doing now. So all he wants is a better balance between socialism and capitalism. Give us universal health care, universal college, clean elections, paid vacation time by law. We're not looking to do a genuine revolution and, you know, rework the way the entire system is done. We're looking for a political revolution to end the corruption and to have a government that represents us and does the basic necessities. You know, to ask for what they have in Scandinavia is not crazy. It makes sense because when you look at the data, they actually beat us in all these relevant categories. So if you want to be number one in the world, and this is a message to all the Republicans too, oh, you want to be number one in the world? Okay, well then let's move in that direction. The direction Bernie Sanders is trying to take us is the direction that makes sense and could get us to number one in the world again. So Hillary's camp has to be scared. They have to be scared because when you look at the polling projections from what happened in Wisconsin, I mean, you only have to go back a few months to see Bernie Sanders down like 50 points. And then he just closes the gap, boom, wins on Election Day. Man, that is a Tiger Woods surge if I've ever seen it. Tiger Woods charge. Probably not the best example to use now that he's injured and he's been playing shitty, but Tiger Woods from his prime. Oh, you're up 9 strokes ahead of me with 9 holes to go? That's nice. I'm going to beat you. As he did, I think it was to Ernie Els in some random tournament in the late 90s. But that's what Bernie Sanders is doing right now. And it's amazing to watch. So we're going to have to see what happens in Wisconsin. I believe it's on Saturday. And then my state after that. I'm nervous thinking about it all. Now, on the Republican side, oh, we have some interesting developments. So Ted Cruz crushed Trump by over 10 points. He won by about 13 points. And that means that now there's over a 70% chance of a contested Republican convention. Because moving forward, Donald Trump needs 54% of the delegates in order to win the nomination outright, which doesn't look likely that he'll get that. And Ted Cruz would need 85% of the delegates to win outright, which is just flat out not happening. So what's going to happen is it's going to be a contested convention. There's over a 70% chance it's going to be a contested convention. And the shit is going to hit the fan when that happens. The shit is going to hit the fan because, no matter what, there's going to be a large swath of the Republican base that's unhappy. And honestly, you can't blame them for that. And I've said it before, and some people in my audience have taken issue with me when I've said it, but I say it because I think it's true. If Donald Trump has the plurality of the votes going into the convention, which I think he almost certainly will, yeah, I think he should get the nomination. He doesn't have a majority, I know, but he has a plurality, which means he has more votes than anybody else in the race. So imagine that's against, you know, they try to pull some bullshit like that on Bernie Sanders. Let's say Bernie Sanders had a plurality of the votes and more votes than anybody else running. He's running against. Would Bernie supporters out there be like, no, it's cool. Let's contest it and let's have somebody try to steal it from him. No, we'd say he has the most votes. It's not a majority, but it's a plurality. He should get the nomination. Yeah, I think that's true. I think that's true whether it's Hillary Clinton that gets it, whether it's Bernie Sanders that gets it, whether it's Donald Trump that gets it, whether it's anybody else that gets it, because I believe in a system that actually makes fucking sense. You know, I'm still mad about Al Gore winning the popular vote by 500,000 votes and then actually losing the election to George W. Bush because of the stupid-ass Electoral College. I know. I believe me. I have a degree in this shit. I know the whole purpose of the Electoral College. I just don't think it's a good idea anymore. So, you know, call me crazy. If Trump has the plurality of votes, I think he should get the nomination, and they're almost certainly going to try to jack it from him because the Republican establishment doesn't like him because they view him as uncontrollable. So don't, you know, mix it up in your mind here that they think, oh, we're against Donald Trump because he's racist and he's pro-torture. Are you crazy? He just comes out and says in normal language what they've been saying, the Republican establishment has been saying in coded language for over a decade, probably since the 1980s. So he comes out and he says it. The neocons did torture. They believed in torture. They used it. And then he comes along and just says it, yeah, I'm going to torture. And then they feign outrage like the reason they're against him is because he's doing the same things that they're in favor of. No. The reason they're against him is because they think, we don't know if he'll listen to the donors. We don't know if corporate America is going to be, you know, the people who steer his campaign. And you can't have that on the Republican side. See, on the Republican side, they just use the evangelical voters. They just use the white nationalists in order to try to get elected. And then when they get in there, they listen to their corporate overlords. Donald Trump, they're afraid that he might actually be his own man in there. And who knows what the fuck he'll do if he's his own man. Maybe he will start doing protectionism and, you know, he wouldn't let corporations go overseas and fuck over American workers and make more profit that way. Nobody knows what he would do. I mean, it's also possible he goes in there and he randomly invades Russia and we have World War III and a nuclear holocaust and then the world is over. That's also possible too, but that doesn't factor in nearly as much to their considerations as who's going to listen to the donors. That's why they try to trot out Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan and all these other people to say, don't you want these people, Republican base? And they said, fuck no, not interested. So because Cruz won Wisconsin, it's almost certainly going to be a contested convention now, over a 70% chance, and it's going to be such a shit show to watch what happens there. So for people who are political junkies, buckle up. Okay. There you have it. That's the election from last night. Now, let's tell you what Hillary Clinton was up to during said election and as the votes were rolling in. So as the votes were rolling in for the Wisconsin primary last night, where was Hillary Clinton? Well, she was at a fundraiser because she just can't help herself. So Haaretz reports here, Hillary was spending her evening with top donors in New York City. She raised at least $60,000 Tuesday night at a fundraiser hosted by Jack Bendheim, the owner of a company that manufactures veterinary health products and nutritional supplements. Bendheim, a former vice president of the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, has deep ties to New York's Orthodox Jewish community. Okay, so this is just one example, but it's been happening nonstop recently. We covered a story about how George Clooney had a fundraiser for her, where to be in the front row, it only costs about $353,000 per plate. You get to be in her presence. Bill may be there, too. You get to be around them. They may even let you touch their garments. Ooh, now pay $353,000 to bribe them, and then when they get in office, obviously, if you call, they'll answer, and they'll do your bidding. Okay. It drives me crazy because we all know inside Hillary's campaign right now, they're panicking. They're panicking because Bernie Sanders won 8 of the last 9 states. He even went back and had to change Nevada to a victory for him. So he's winning and he's crushing and he's making a genuine, genuine charge here. So they're panicking and inside the campaign, they're like, we don't get it. How do we stop his charge? We don't understand. He's winning now, and what do we do? And my response is, you're doing it right now. What you're doing is the cause of this, massive downturn for your campaign and surge in his campaign. Don't get me wrong. He's running a fantastic campaign, and all credit to him and his campaign. But they know this, too. They couldn't charge as much if it wasn't for Hillary being Hillary. Because Hillary's so smug and condescending and, oh, please, I got this locked up. The Democratic base is going to vote for me. She feels so entitled to it. So what does she do? The main attack from Bernie Sanders against her has been, you raise too much money from donors. And she's like, no, I don't. Now watch me as I go to raise money from donors. As the votes roll in Wisconsin, you're doing it right now. Again, I always think of the phone call from the desperate boyfriend to the girlfriend that just broke up with him. And he's like, just tell me what I did wrong. You're doing it right now, man. Hang up the fucking phone. What's wrong with you? Hillary, you're doing it right now. $353,000 fundraiser with George Clooney as you pretend like you're for the common man. Nothing could be further from the common man than that. Wall Street fundraisers out the wazoo. We've covered so many that she's done in the midst of the campaign. You know, she just did one with down-ballot Democratic candidates where she's raising money for the Democratic Party, too. And she goes out and she brags about it as if that means – as if it's a positive thing. And she's like, well, I don't know if Bernie Sanders is trying to get other Democrats elected. I just did a Wall Street fundraiser to get other Democrats money. But that's the problem. That's why people like him and they don't like you, because you are trying to raise money from Wall Street, not just for yourself but for other Democratic candidates, and you're creating another generation of sellout Democrats. And Bernie's like, no, that's the problem. I don't agree with that. I don't want to raise money from Wall Street. So he raises money, as he says, and as everybody in the audience knows at this point, $27 at a time. That's the average donation to his campaign. So he's actually raising money from the accountant and the teacher and the construction worker. I like how I'm like just giving a list of the village people. From all just normal jobs, normal people. Because they look at him and they go, that guy's going to look out for me. You know, you want to talk about doing somebody's bidding. How about doing the bidding of the American public? How about that crazy idea? See, that's what we call democracy. Whereas Hillary Clinton, we're the special interests. We're the Wall Street people. There was this big scandal recently about there was a Greenpeace activist who went up to Hillary Clinton and was like, can you stop taking money from the fossil fuel industry? And Hillary's like, I'm so tired of Bernie Sanders lying about me. We don't do that. Well, lo and behold, you go and you look at the numbers. Of course they do that. Hillary Clinton pushed fracking all around the world as Secretary of State. Why? Many fracking companies gave her money, gave the Clinton campaign money. How stupid do you think we are? She's taking money for her campaign. She's taking money for her super PAC. She's taking money directly into her pocket for speeches. And she's taking money in the Clinton Foundation. Over the course of the Clintons' careers, both of them, they've raised over $3 billion from private interest. $3 billion. You think they're not going to listen to those people? Just in speeches. So into their own pockets, over $100 million. They don't care about grandmothers in South Dakota. They just don't. They play the political game, and that's why they hate Bernie so much. Because they've mastered this traditional political game of sell out and then get elected. And then they see an insurgent candidate who says, I'm going to skip that part of selling out, and I'm going to go right to the American people. And they think, oh, you violated the rules. How dare you do this? Same thing with Barney Frank, who's been stumping for Hillary lately. He's aghast. He's like, oh, Bernie Sanders. I mean, look at what he's doing. It's so irresponsible to try to change the system. You have to work within the system, and you can be as far left as you want while selling out, but you got to sell out. To them, it's just a duh. To them, they don't even view it as corruption or bribery because they've been doing it for so long and it's so integrated in the system, it's such a part of the system, that they think nothing of it. Hillary genuinely thinks, what do you mean? So, okay, I take money from Goldman Sachs. That's what they offer. What's the big deal? Well, the big deal is they fucking had fraud as a business model, literally, and nobody's going to jail. That's the problem. The problem is they bought the government, and then lo and behold, whenever there's problems for any big bank, the government rushes in and bails them out. Why do you think the government doesn't rush in to bail out your local dry cleaner, for example, or your local deli if they run into financial trouble? They didn't pay their bribes. That's why. Whereas Wall Street, they paid their bribes, so of course they get a blank fucking check from the government, paid for by the middle class, and these sellout Democrats come to the American people and say, we're looking out for you as we just took your money and gave it to the big banks when they crashed the economy from their own shitty decisions. Why? I don't understand. Why? Why is Bernie Sanders surging? Hillary said as she sat at her, expensive fundraiser in New York City with Wall Street donors. You're doing it right now. All right, now. I don't have time for the Bernie Sanders long interview yet. We're going to do that after the break. We're going to skip to a Donald Trump supporter. And you're going to see something here that is pretty much everything you need to know about Trump supporters. TYT reporter Jordan Chariton was at a Donald Trump rally and he spoke to a supporter of his, and he asked for one policy reason to actually be in favor of Trump. And the fail level on this is off the charts.
You've actually been around the Midwest, apparently, for Donald Trump. This isn't your first event. What's your favorite policy of his?
I really don't have a favorite policy, but I really like Donald Trump because he is a U.S. citizen and he is an entrepreneur, and what he says is what he's going to do.
You led with he's a U.S. citizen, so I'm assuming that means you think the current president isn't a U.S. citizen?
You know what? No comment on that.
Okay. Well, it's just kind of an odd to lead with that, but I'll let that go. Now, you said you think he's going to, you know, kind of get things done and this and that because, I guess, because of his business record?
Yes, definitely. You know, he's built many hotels, and what he says is he's going to do it, and he gets the right people, the correct people, and I don't know about you, but I've been into his Miami golf course, which was very beautiful, classy, elegant, amazing. And also the Donald Trump in Chicago building, and it's just amazing what he can build and the structure and who he hires to just make such an incredible building.
But there's got to be at least like one policy of his that kind of drew you in.
I would hope.
Because he gets criticized that he's not specific about what he's going to do.
Well, if he's not specific on what he wants to do, it's you're a businessman and you don't give away your ideas because you don't want other people to take your ideas.
But you're trying to convince people to vote for you to become president, so don't you need to give them something to go on?
Yes, I think he does pretty good. What he says is what he's going to do, and I trust him 100%. I don't have a problem.
Okay. So, third time to Trump, no policy, just Trump?
Just Trump.
That may be one of the saddest things I've ever seen in my life. You know what comes to mind as I watch this? The arguments that have been coming from right-wing talk radio for decades now, where they say, you know, the problem is it's the damn liberals who always make emotional decisions. They don't care about the harsh truths of the world, and they're always bleeding heart liberal. Oh, my feelings point me in this direction, so I gotta be in favor of this because of my feelings. This is the arguments that they make. It ain't us. It's you. That was the clearest example ever of, I don't know, Donald Trump makes me feel good. I like him because he's strong. I have zero policy reason to support him, but I'm going to be in favor of him because he evokes emotions in me. That's why I like him. It ain't us that don't care about the harsh truths of the world. Of course we do. That's the whole point of being a liberal. For the right, and specifically for authoritarians on the right, oh, it's all about that primitive part of your brain that's like, must find leader. Oh, leader there. Ooh, strong person. I support because strength, business stuff. Obama is an American. None of that. At no point, to steal from, what is it, Billy Madison, in your incoherent ramblings, were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought? So, my favorite dodge is probably, you don't give away your ideas. So why are you voting for him? Oh, I don't know. Okay, well, he said nothing to try to draw people in. Well, he wouldn't want to give away your ideas. So then how do you know that you should be voting for him if he hasn't given away any of his ideas and policies? Well, it's an admission. I got nothing. He even said at the end, Jordan was like, so no policy, just Trump. Just Trump. And look, I don't want to be too hard just on her because it's not just her. I think it's probably most of the people in the Trump movement. It's just this thing, this feeling they have, the strong man. I'll make America great again, man. That's what it comes down to. But what does that mean? It doesn't mean anything. It's just words. It's vague talk. It's generalities. And then when you actually try to get him to give policy specifics, he's out. And oftentimes what Trump does, he'll contradict himself. You know, whether it's on foreign policy. I don't know, stay out of Syria, love Vladimir Putin. fight them. I'm fine with that. And then the next day, it's, oh, we need to bomb ISIS, bomb them to oblivion, and while we're at it, let's attack the families of ISIS, too. When you look at economics, half the time he's like, well, yeah, free trade is a problem. We need to bring American jobs back here and make corporations do it. And then the other half the time he's giving standard right-wing talking points about cutting corporate taxes and, you know, doing the plans that they've been doing since fucking Reagan. Okay, which is it? It's not about, it's never been about policies with him. And, of course, the one thing that even vaguely resembles policy, but not really, that she gave, that you've heard from other people who support Trump is business. Yeah, business record, something, business. Okay. He's gone bankrupt. His companies have gone bankrupt 4 times. I've gone bankrupt 0 times. By at least one metric, I'm a better businessman than Donald Trump. Vote for me. And also, the dude was born with a silver spoon in his mouth. Even if you take his own words, he says he, quote, only got a small $1 million loan from his dad. You know what? There's a lot of smart people out there who could do a lot with that $1 million, and they could do a hell of a lot better than what Donald Trump did. Did you know if he had invested his money in the market in a certain way, he would have made more money just off of what he was given? And for the record, he didn't just take $1 million. That's what he got when his dad was alive. When his dad died, he got much more. So his dad was worth over $200 million. This idea of like, oh, self-made man, he's the opposite of a self-made man. What a joke this is. And if I was given over $100 million head start, you know what I would do? Not go bankrupt 4 times. So again, business genius, my ass cheeks. He's not. He's just not. So there you have it. The same people who argue that the liberals make emotional decisions and their bleeding hearts lead them in the wrong direction and they don't care about the harsh truths, nonsense. On the far right, you have people who are genuine authoritarians. They're looking for their leader. They're looking for their strongman. They can't wait to shut off their mind and follow whatever their guy says. And when somebody actually gets pressed on it by a real reporter, credit to Jordan there for doing his job, it's all a facade. There's nothing there. It crumbles. About feelings and emotions and he's strong in business and stuff. Now go talk to a Bernie Sanders supporter and see the trillion reasons why they support him. They're not going to, let's see, Medicare for all, I'm in favor of that. I love the idea of raising the minimum wage to a living wage, $15 per hour. I love the idea that he's been against every single trade deal since it started, and Hillary has been for many of them. I love the idea of getting out of the Middle East and letting the other Muslim nations take care of ISIS. We can give some logistical support to the Kurds or whoever, but I like the idea of largely staying out. We've been in there this whole time, and it's only made it worse. I like the idea of having a political revolution and getting money out of politics, as Bernie Sanders talks about all the time. You ask Bernie Sanders a question on one thing involving policy, he'll give you an answer on 5 things involving policy, and all of his followers like him because of the policy. Nobody's going, you know that really old-looking Jewish dude? I like him because I like the way he looks. Just Sanders. No, they say, here's my laundry list of reasons to support him. That's the difference between the far left, which is not even really far left in America, it's just being a normal person, and the far right in America, and there's a lot there. Okay. Take a break. When we come back, we'll get into that Bernie Sanders interview, and we're going to bust up some myths. All right, stay right there, guys.
I drop the beats. In the planet of Earth, I am the most famous person of the world. Everybody knows who I am, even the people who don't know who I am, because I am very super famous. A lot of people know I exist. I am very super famous. Super famous. Very super famous. You are not, so you are shit. All around the world, people know who I am. Even in the Chinese countries like Japan. North, south, east, west to east. I make their panties wet like basements in New Orleans. In the French language, girls say mon moitié génito. Spanish girls also say things, but I don't know what they're talking about because I don't speak Spanish at all. But they're probably talking about about how my penis is super not small. I led the vaginist revolution in Russia. They call me the crocodile hunter in Australia. Wait, that sounds like I hunt penises. I don't. I do chicks in Iraq. They found WMDs, women on my dick. I'm Osama bin Seaman, the vaginal terrorist. On 69/11, I took down two chicks, and a third girl inexplicably collapsed on her own. Sorry, I just watched Loser Change, the Pornspiracy video. German girls devour my Frank Squirter in Germany. I raised my rod in Egypt, and I split the Red Sea. By that, I mean I had sex with a girl on her period. That's right, I don't mind ketchup on my hot dog as long as the bun is tight. In England, girls ask me to be or not to be the person who will take their anal virginity. I always do, but I still make sure to wear a condom, because my sperm's so famous it could make you pregnant in your bum. I am very super famous, super famous, super famous. Very super famous. A lot of people know I exist. I am very super famous, super famous, super famous. Very super famous. You are not, so you are shit. If a lot of people know who you are, it means you're a talented artist. In order to be super famous, you have to be the most smartest. When I'm on the red carpets or at celebrity parties, fat kids are on my dick like hot bitches on Smarties. More people know me than there are people on the earth. In all the thousands of countries, people are singing my words. Even in the countries where people die because they're so bored, they say wants to buy my album instead of going to the grocery store. Because I'm more famous than food. That's right, you heard me. More people know me than there are people who know how to eat. I'm more famous than mountains. I'm more famous than watches. And if you want to hang with me, make sure your panties are crotchless. I'm like Lee Harvey Oswald. I shoot really fast all over your face until your head flies back. Back, back, and to the left. Back, back, and to the left. For your safety, wear a helmet and a semen-proof vest. Yeah, the Eiffel Tower is a lot like my dick. It's big, and it stings when soap gets inside the tip. My sex moves are like the movie Die Hard with a Vengeance. They're awesome. And Jeremy Irons is a good bad guy. I am very super famous, super famous, super famous. Very super famous. A lot of people know I exist. I am very super famous, super famous, super famous. Very super famous. You are not, so you are shit. The girls up north want to get all up in my butt. Even though I'm Canadian, I'm more famous than Canada. I'll light a dick fire to warm up your cold vagina hands, and then I'll cover you in white like the Ku Klux Klan. All the Mexicans love me down in South America, from Colombia to Brazil all the way to Algeria. I'm Che Vagina. I liberate girls from the prison pen.
Get into this, the fakest controversy in human history. So Bernie Sanders sat down for an interview with the New York Daily News, and every establishment shill on the planet is pretending that he bombed the interview, and they're using it to say he's not fit to be president because, get this, he lacks policy substance. Bernie Sanders? Bernie Sanders. Of all the criticisms to make of Bernie Sanders, not enough policy detail coming from that guy. Really? That's the argument you're going to use? And Jimmy Dore made a fantastic point about this. He said he's never seen so many contradictory arguments used against a single candidate. Because half the time people say about Bernie, he's never going to get all these specific policy things that he wants enacted. So, pie in the sky liberal. Okay, wait, so which is it? Is it that he can never get all of these very detailed plans enacted? Or is it that he doesn't have any very detailed plans? That's the problem. You see, that's a contradiction. You got to pick one. You can't go with both. But the strategy is throw mud against the wall, whatever sticks, just hope something sticks, and then move along. So if the arguments happen to clash or contradict each other, whatever. I don't care. We're just trying to kneecap them anyway. But you make yourself look stupid. So I'm going to go ahead here and go directly to the parts that are the most controversial in the interview. You guys can read the whole thing on your own, but let's go to the parts that are causing the most controversy, and we'll see just how bad he really did in this interview. So, the Daily News says to him, "Do you have a sense that there is a particular statute or statutes that a prosecutor could have or should have invoked to bring indictments?" Talking specifically against Wall Street for the subprime mortgage crisis. Sanders says, "I suspect there are, yes." The Daily News says, "You believe that, but do you know?" Sanders says, "I believe that that is the case. Do I have them in front of me now, legal statutes? No. But if I would, yeah, that's what I believe. Yes." So people are saying, oh, yeah, Sarah Palin-like moment. They asked for the specific statutes you would use if you were the prosecutor going against the Wall Street for the subprime mortgage crisis, and you couldn't say, gotcha. Okay. I defy anybody to answer this question that they asked here without looking stuff up first. Look, I'm as big of a policy wonk as there is. I talk about politics all day, every day. It's my fucking job. Could I name you a specific statute that they're going to go after Wall Street for the subprime mortgage crisis? Statute 762B, subsection L, states, and I quote, no. See, the answer to this is, there's a million different ways you can do it. You can go after Wall Street for what they did. Now, number one, and Bernie goes on to bring this up, is just fraud. They committed fraud. He always gives the example of Goldman Sachs, where he says, no, they sold these toxic subprime mortgages to their clients as if it was a good investment, and they told them, you're going to make money off this. And then they turn around and bet for those same products to fail. So that's just fraud. You're selling something as if it's good and you believe it's good and then you know it's bad, so you're betting against it. So you're making money two ways. You just lied in selling the product. That is fraud. So he answers that at one point, and they're like, yeah, but what specific statute do you mean? I don't know the specific statute off the top of my head. I'm just saying that this is fraud and we can go after that. Yeah, but give me more details. What do you mean more details? It's fraud. What are you talking about? But how would you go after it? Well, there's a million ways you can answer that question. And look, again, I'm a policy wonk. Do I know enough to give you all the details? Of course not. So do you go through the Fed? I don't know. Maybe. You'd have to talk to experts about this. Do you go through the Treasury Department? I don't know. Maybe. You'd have to talk to experts. Do you, for example, in some cases with the crimes that happen on Wall Street, try to use anti-monopoly laws that are on the books but haven't been enforced in a really long time? Can you try to get break up the big banks, for example, that way? I don't know, maybe. I'd have to talk to experts. Do you have to have a new piece of legislation and go through Congress? I don't know, maybe. You'd have to speak to experts in the relevant area. The fact that he can't give you the exact statute he would use in order to, attack it doesn't mean he doesn't know what he's talking about. It means he's nuanced and he knows there's different ways to do it and he hasn't made up his mind as to which yet, and he would like to get the way which coincides most with the Constitution. Because, yes, some things, you're not a dictator. You can't just say, I will do whatever I want as president. That's not the way it works. You might need new legislation to do certain things. And for other things, you might not need new legislation. So this idea that that's they got him. No. Give me the specific statute. Obama couldn't give you, and he's been in office already, for certain things he couldn't give you specific statutes. So what a joke this is. And meanwhile, at the same time this is going on, Donald Trump yesterday – 2 days ago, was talking to Hannity, and we're going to do this story later on in the show. He was asked what government programs would you cut. He said the Department of Environmental. And then, okay, it gets worse. So you're saying, whatever, he means the EPA, so whatever. No, he goes on to say the DEP. I think he thinks that's the Department of Environmental Protection. It's not a thing. That's not the EPA. Environmental Protection Agency, EPA is what it is. He doesn't know. Where's all the fucking, look, Trump. Oh, dropout. Oh, he doesn't know anything. Oh, lacks policy details. Crickets, fucking crickets. Bernie Sanders, the most substantive guy. They flip it on its head. He couldn't tell you it was Statute L, Subsection D, Area 413, Line 12. Therefore, got to get rid of him. Come on, he's got no chance. Move along. All right, now, the Daily News continues here. What kind of fraudulent activities are you referring to when you say that? This is after he brings up, in detail, the fraud on Wall Street. Sanders says, what kind of fraudulent activity? Fraudulent activity that brought this country into the worst economic decline in its history by selling packages of fraudulent, worthless subprime mortgages. How's that for a start? And the Daily News says, so if you look forward a year, maybe 2 years right now, you have J.P. Morgan has 241,000 employees, about 20,000 of them in New York, $192 billion in net assets. What happens? What do you foresee? What is J.P. Morgan in year two of? And then Sanders jumps in. What I foresee is a stronger national economy. He's talking about if he broke up the big banks. And, in fact, a stronger economy in New York State as well. What I foresee is a financial system that – which actually makes affordable loans to small and medium-sized businesses, does not live as an island unto themselves, concerned about their own profits, and in fact creating incredibly complicated financial tools which have led us into the worst economic recession in the modern history of the United States. Daily News says, I get that point. I'm just looking at the method because actions have reactions, right? There are pluses and minuses. So if you push here, you may get an unintended consequence that you don't understand. So what I'm looking for is, how can we understand? If you look at J.P. Morgan, just as an example, or you can do Citibank or Bank of America, what would it be? What would that institution be? Would there be a consumer bank? Where would the investing go? And then Sanders says, I'm not running J.P. Morgan Chase or Citibank. And they say, no, but you're breaking it up. Sanders says, that's right. And that is their decision as to what they do and how they want to reconfigure themselves. That's not my decision. So again, they look at it and think, oh, he shouldn't say more about the thing he just said a lot about. So you got him. What does that mean? What do you mean got him? You didn't get him at all. He's saying, after we break them up, is the federal government going to go in there and run every aspect of it? No. You do the regulation. You enforce some regulations that are on the books. Or if you need to have new regulations, then, you know, pass a new law or try to pass a new law. And then you break them up. And then after you break them up, you just go back to doing what is the new, you know, efficient regulation, whether it's Glass-Steagall or some other form of regulation, and then they get to make all their decisions because they're still going to be a private company. And they're like, yeah, but what are you saying about how it would look after you break them up? He's like, what do you mean? We're going to break them up. Yeah, but what does – when you break them up, do things happen where the thing and the government runs the thing or what? Aha! There's nothing there. Why? They act like – And, oh, my God, all the fucking idiots, I think Halperin or was it Chait, one of these pseudo-liberal pricks, was like, if Hillary gave these answers, are you kidding me? They would have crucified her. Are you joking? Hillary's gotten softballs down the center of the plate nonstop. She's never been asked questions that are even close to as difficult as this. And if she was, she would have nothing to say. Whereas Bernie's like, okay, let me tell you specifically how there was fraud at Goldman Sachs. This is the way it worked. The subprime mortgage packages were the problem. We got to regulate these things efficiently. The big banks today are bigger than they were before we had the problem, before we had the crash. Therefore, we should probably break them up. And they're like, yeah, but what statute are you going to use, and what are they going to look like afterwards? If you can't tell me every single consequence and unintended consequence right now and have solutions for it, well then, you step aside. You're done. The bias is so incredible. It's oozing from everything they say. Hillary Clinton sent out this interview, just the whole text of the interview. Now people are going to say, well, what do you mean? That's full context. So shouldn't they do that? Well, we should all stop pretending like his answers were bad, because they weren't. They're like, oh, yeah, I was getting the statute of the thing that exactly specifically what he would do. And to try to pretend like the guy with the most detailed platform is not detailed enough is beyond disingenuous, okay? And there's a million ways to try to do the things that he wants to do. And for him to hold back and say, give specifics as to the problem and give an idea of how to fix it, is that enough? Fuck yeah, that's enough. Whether you use the Fed or the Treasury or monopoly laws that are already on the books, or you have to go through Congress again and pass new legislation to try to get breaking up the banks accomplished in a rational way, that's all stuff that an intelligent person would say. Okay? To try to say that means he's substanceless, no, that means you're substanceless and you're trying to do fake attacks against him in order to claim victory and in order to attack his strength and pretend it's his weakness. This is a thing that the Republicans did with John Kerry. I don't know if you guys remember this, but John Kerry was a war hero. And they tried to say, war hero, maybe he's the biggest pussy in the world, and, you know, he's a liar, and he's a war criminal. Maybe that's the case. So they took the thing that should have been the biggest positive for him. George Bush was snorting cocaine and dodging active duty during the war, where John Kerry was actually there. So they spin it and try to say, oh, his biggest strength is actually his biggest weakness. Is the Republican playbook 101. Same thing here with New York Daily News. Take the area where Bernie Sanders is obviously superior, all of the policy specifics and the nuance and the detail, and hammer away at that to the point where he's asked questions that don't even make sense, and they're beyond anybody's comprehension. And then they say, well, just act like he answered them poorly, even if he didn't, and then we're good. And then we'll, you know, run with that narrative that he's not specific enough. Well, thank you for exposing yourselves as the hack outlet that you are. You can now join the Washington Post and others who clearly have an anti-Bernie bias, and they can't wait to support establishment candidates. There was one part in the interview where he was asked about, well, how would you do it? Would you just have the authority to unilaterally do it? And his response was basically, well, maybe. We'd have to look into that. So maybe we'd have the ability, like I was talking about, to use anti-monopoly laws to go after some of these big banks. And maybe that's a way to go about it. Maybe you get the Fed involved, maybe not. Like, he's given all those details, and then they say, well, wait, you'd have the ability to unilaterally do it? What, are you a dictator? It's like, wait, what? Did you listen to what I was saying? I was trying to give you the exact, you know, ways in which that could possibly be accomplished. But again, I'd have to talk to experts. And they're like, no, that makes you not know anything. What a joke this is. All right. Let's go to another Bernie story here, this one about the Panama Papers. There's quite a bit to take away from this one. Bernie Sanders, as early as 2011, made some prescient comments about the Panama Papers corruption scandal. Let's watch.
A word about the Panama Free Trade Agreement. Now, Panama is a very small country. Its entire annual economic output is only $26.7 billion a year, or about 0.2% of the American economy. So I think no one is going to legitimately stand up here and say that trading with such a small country is going to significantly increase American jobs. Then why would we? Why would we be considering a trade agreement with Panama? What's going on there? Well, it turns out, Mr. President, that Panama is a world leader when it comes to allowing wealthy Americans and large corporations to evade U.S. taxes by stashing their cash in offshore tax havens. And the Panama Free Trade Agreement would make this bad situation much worse. I'm a member of the Budget Committee, as you are, Mr. President, and we have heard testimony time and time again that our country is losing up to $100 billion every year as corporations stash their money in postal addresses in the Cayman Islands, Bermuda, and in Panama. And this trade agreement makes that situation even worse. According to Citizens for Tax Justice, quote, a tax haven has one of three characteristics. It has no income tax or a very low rate income tax. It has bank secrecy laws. And it has a history of non-cooperation with other countries on exchanging information about tax matters. Panama has all three of those, and they are probably the worst. End of quote, according to Citizens for Tax Justice. The trade agreement with Panama would effectively bar the United States from cracking down on illegal and abusive offshore tax havens in Panama. In fact, combating tax haven abuse in Panama would be a violation of this free trade agreement, exposing the U.S. to fines from international authorities. Well, at a time when we have a $14 trillion plus national debt, and at a time when we are frantically figuring out ways to try to lower our deficit, some of us believe that it is a good idea to do away with all of these tax havens by which the wealthy and large corporations stash their money abroad and avoid paying U.S. taxes. The Panama Trade Agreement would make that goal even more difficult.
Okay, now this is a clear example of him being right and him calling this out in advance, but it's also a clear example of if we had a press that knew what the fuck they were doing, they would have been saying the same things. But since our media, specifically corporate media, is so fundamentally broken, they can't state the obvious. So the Democratic Party and the Republican Party were both for that Panama Free Trade Agreement and Colombia Free Trade Agreement. So the only picture that you're going to get painted in the mainstream media is, we have an economic deal here. It will be good for our country. And the Democrats are for it, and the Republicans are for it. Therefore, it must be good. Bipartisanship is working. Let's move forward. That's what you get from it. But anybody who gives a shit about the facts can do the analysis that Bernie Sanders did there. And I'm sure he would tell you the same thing, that while many people are impressed by this, it's not that hard to see that, oh, Panama's really small. Why would we trade with them? It's not going to significantly increase U.S. jobs. Are you kidding me? If anything, we lose jobs. We always lose jobs in these free trade agreements. So what possible positive outcome is there for anybody as a result of this deal? Well, he just explained it. You have the Cayman Islands, you have Bermuda, you have Panama. These are all giant tax havens, and the idea is to strengthen economic ties with them, to make it easier for rich people and corporations to shove their money over there and dodge taxes. That's the entire point of it. This was a deal that was negotiated by the Bush administration. When Obama got in power, he supported it, and Hillary Clinton, as Secretary of State, supported it, and many Democrats supported it. And it was only the Progressive Caucus and people like Bernie Sanders who were like, we see what's fucking happening here. You're both giant sellouts, the Republican Party and the Democratic Party. You're both huge sellouts to the rich, and you're just doing their bidding. We see this. We understand what's happening. And then today, oh my God, it's so funny. The media, the mainstream media, if they even talk about it, oftentimes they just don't talk about the Panama Papers. But whoever did talk about it was like, my goodness, I cannot believe that international elites and corporations and the donor class are dodging their taxes. Wow. And the rest of us are. Go look at my coverage of it. I said I file it under www.noshit.com. Because we already have other facts that are incredible facts that should be spoken about on a weekly basis of 18,000 addresses registered to one place in the Cayman Islands. That's obviously to dodge taxes. It's the most obvious thing ever. The worldwide tax dodging industry is worth $20 trillion. Not only are elites and corporations dodging taxes, it's probably the case that almost all of them are dodging taxes. And Bernie's like, I think we have a problem here. Yeah, Bernie, you're right. And sadly, you're one of few politicians who calls it out, because you're one of the few with integrity and with the actual record to prove that you're for the people and you're actually doing your job. Okay. Let's take a break, and when we come back, Donald Trump, I spoiled this story earlier. I shouldn't have done it. He goes and makes up a department. That's great. We're going to cover that when we come back. And then we got John McCain is apparently very angry about Obama's foreign policy. So he wrote a letter to the defense secretary, and oh, my God. He's right on the diagnosis. He's dead wrong at the solution. It's unbelievable. And then later on, anti-marijuana hearings held in Washington, and a bunch of fucking dinosaurs go out there, and they sound like dinosaurs, and they judge everybody, and they make stupid points. So, buckle up for that, and much more. Got a lot to cover here in the last 30 minutes or so on Secular Talk. We'll be right back, guys. Thank you. right, we're back, guys. And Donald Trump. this guy. What are we going to do with him? All right, there's a lot to say about this. Let me set it up for you. Donald Trump was asked by Hannity which departments of the federal government he would cut. Here's his answer.
To eliminate any departments.
Oh, absolutely. First of all.
Yeah, cut departments, man.
We want to bring education back to Wisconsin, right? Right? So, we end Common Core, and Department of Education, the Department of Education is massive, and it can be largely eliminated. Now, you maybe want to have a little bit of, tentacles out there, make sure everything, but largely we can eliminate the Department of Education. Department of Environmental, the DEP is killing us environmentally. It's just killing our businesses.
He made that up. That's not a thing. That's not a department. Yeah, the departments I want to cut, Department of Environmental, the DEP. It's killing all of our businesses and whatnot. You know what I'm saying? DEP, DEP. Isn't there a hair gel named DEP? Or is it... I think it's DEP. I'm pretty sure it's DEP. I could be wrong, but I think it is. I think I wore that when I was in, 7th grade or so. What the fuck? This guy is leading on the Republican side. He just makes up different agencies of government. The Department of Environmental. He's probably talking about the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency. But the reason why this is actually a story and why it's worth covering, honestly, I was going to let it go when he said Department of Environmental. Because it's like, okay, you get what he's saying. He's talking about the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency. But then he went on. Why would you go on? You, in your own mind, you would think that you would know at that point when you say Department of Environmental, I really don't have control of where this is going, do I? I don't know the exact name, so pivot to something else. No, he said Department of Environmental. And then he goes on to clarify with a made-up agency, the DEP. I think in his mind, that's Department of Environmental Protection. He makes it up. Oh, God, that's so sad. So as I watched this, I was thinking about how he really is in over his head. It's hilarious that the New York Daily News just did an interview with Bernie Sanders, and they're doing these hacky attacks against him where they're pretending see, Bernie Sanders is substanceless. Bernie Sanders is substanceless? I've never heard a less true argument in my life. And the reason they say that is, hey, there was one part where we asked him exactly what statute he would use to break up the bank, and he couldn't give us an answer on the spot that was specific. Therefore, he's done. Meanwhile, his answer was perhaps the Fed, perhaps the Treasury, perhaps laws that are already on the books. Perhaps we have to pass new legislation and break it up that way. You didn't give us something very specific. Oh, my God. He didn't tell us statute 17C, subsection L. Oh, my God. We got him. Okay, compare that to where the bar is set for Donald fucking Trump. How many stories are out there on this? Very few. Very few. And mainstream pundits are not saying, oh, my God, over. Look at this guy. They're not doing that. So the different standards are unbelievable. And a campaign advisor, a former campaign advisor to Donald Trump, who stepped down recently, wrote an article where they said, hey, you guys need to understand, he really is in over his head because he didn't expect to do this well. He was going to use this as another typical Trump thing to, add to his resume, hey, I ran for president, add to his celebrity status, add to his ego and his narcissism. But he didn't expect to get this far. He doesn't know anything. So now when you look at it and that he's leading, it's like, ooh, that is fucking scary. And then every once in a while you get a very clear glimpse that indeed that's true, that he didn't expect to get this far and he doesn't know what he's doing. When he says shit Department of Environmental, DEP. You're going to vote for this guy? Again, I'm reminded of people saying about liberals. People on the right say about liberals all the time. Bleeding heart liberals, they always go based off their emotions, not based on the facts. If you vote for this guy, after seeing this clip, it is 100% based on emotions, not on facts. He doesn't even know the name of basic government agencies that you've probably known since fucking middle school. So what a joke this is. What a joke this is. Man, Donald Trump, he's running... not to be in the White House, but to be in the beige house. What's something he would call it? Obviously, EPA is Department of Environmental. So the White House is the... I mean, obviously, he just put a giant Trump sign on it. But Dove House? Yeah, I'm trying to get into the... I don't know. Gray House. Something. What's the name of that thing again? Yeah, it's next to the Department of Environmental. Let's move along to John McCain. And, what he said about the war against ISIS. Man, the implication of this is the saddest thing of all, so. John McCain is apparently very angry about Obama's foreign policy, so he wrote a letter to Defense Secretary Ash Carter, whose name I always giggle at because I always think of Ashton Kutcher when I read it. I don't know why. So listen to what he said here. As a young military officer, I bore witness to the failed policy of gradual escalation that ultimately led to our nation's defeat in the Vietnam War. Now, as chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, I fear this administration's grudging incrementalism in the war against the Islamic State risks another slow, grinding failure for our nation. He continues here, my conversations with military commanders both on the ground and in the Pentagon have led me to the disturbing yet unavoidable conclusion that they have been reduced from considering what it will take to win to what they will be allowed to do by this administration, and it will be the men and women serving in our military and our national security that will pay the price. The argument is, damn, the war against ISIS really is starting to look like Vietnam. That's point number one. Point number two is, therefore, we should escalate it. If there was ever a wrong conclusion drawn from a proper premise, is the war against ISIS or just U.S. wars in the Middle East? Have they turned into Vietnam? Fuck yeah, they have. Is the answer to do a deeper ground invasion and send in hundreds of thousands of troops? No, no, no. How can you possibly come to that conclusion? That's been the problem all along. And therein lies the massive contradiction that is John McCain. Every once in a while, John McCain says something that's spot on. Where he was tortured, so he knows how fucked up torture is, and he knows that nations who torture, on that issue, they become the bad guy. You're the bad guy if you torture. So he's been strongly against torture from the beginning. Great, he's right on that. But then randomly, he's in favor of invading every single fucking... I mean, he's never met an intervention he doesn't love, so he's a jackass on that front. And here, he's right on the first point. On the second point, his conclusion is dead wrong. The whole point of Vietnam and the disaster it was is that we stayed there way longer than we should have. Well, we shouldn't have gone in the first place. That's a separate conversation. But after realizing that it was an unwinnable situation, we stayed there, and we increased troops more, and we increased troops more. And he's saying that's so much like Vietnam that we should make the exact same mistake we made in Vietnam and escalate further. I can't, man. I don't get these people. Something's missing. Something's missing up there. I mean, is it all the money they get from the military-industrial complex? Are they doing the bidding of their donors? Are they doing the window dressing in their own mind where they think, I know I'm being a good person, but hey, my agenda just happens to line up with the contractors. I don't know what it is, but I know that he's dead wrong. I mean, look at what we've done in the Middle East. For fuck's sake, we did the war in Iraq, which had nothing to do with 9/11. Saddam had nothing to do with it. Toppled Saddam Hussein, and then you created this power vacuum. The power vacuum was filled by ISIS. ISIS was previously Al-Qaeda in Iraq. Al-Qaeda in Iraq didn't even exist before we invaded. After we invaded, Al-Qaeda in Iraq came in. So we created the vacuum. ISIS rises up out of the vacuum. We stay there. Never mind the additional intervention that we did in Afghanistan, even after we defeated Al-Qaeda and the Taliban, we stayed there. Look at the bombing we're doing in Pakistan and Yemen and Somalia. Now we're doing bombing missions all the time in Syria. We have at least 3,000 advisors, troops on the ground in the Middle East in various places. And all this time, you would think that, okay, so if these interventions worked, what would have happened? We would have fewer terrorists today than we did before the war on terror. Well, the reality is the opposite happened. After we did all these interventions, today there's more terrorists than there were before the war on terror. So this is just like the drug war. the idea is, oh, let's crack down on drugs and do this drug war, and then, hey, lo and behold, we'll make it so nobody's doing drugs anymore. I'm not kidding. There are some people who said, who were orchestrators of the drug war, that we're going to eliminate drug use. Not only is it not eliminated, you didn't even reduce it. The opposite happened. Now there's more drug use. So you flushed $1 trillion down the toilet. People literally died on the border because it's a war, a drug war, and more people are doing drugs. It's an abject failure in every sense of the word. It's the same thing with the war on terror. And then John McCain says, man, this is really starting to look like Vietnam. Okay, so your takeaway should be we need to get out. No. This is looking like Vietnam. We should put more people in. That's the mistake of Vietnam. What is wrong with you? What is wrong with you? Now, don't get me wrong. Does somebody have to fight ISIS? Yes, they're not just going to go away. So, you know, perhaps the Kurds can continue fighting them. Shia militias can continue fighting them. I have no problem backing up the Kurds when they do that. I have no problem giving humanitarian aid to civilians in the region. As long as you go through the proper legal channels and do the right thing and do it with the international community, I have no problem with use of special forces, for example. But when you say we're going to put in more troops, we're going to occupy, you're only going to inflame tensions, you're only going to make it worse, you're only going to help ISIS in their recruiting message, and I'm against that. I want to defeat them in a smart way, in a rational way, and I don't want our people to die in the process, and I don't want to waste trillions of dollars in the process. John McCain, whether or not he realizes it, is pushing us more and more in that wrong direction. All right, now let's move on to state of Mississippi and what they're doing. The state of Mississippi decided to go after LGBT equality. Stay classy. Reuters reports here. Mississippi Governor Phil Bryant on Tuesday signed into law a measure affording wide protections for actions considered discriminatory by gay rights activists. The far-reaching law allows people with religious objections to deny wedding services to same-sex couples. It also clears the way for employers to cite religion in determining workplace policies on dress code, grooming, and bathroom and locker access. Okay, so let's be clear about exactly what this law is. This law legalizes anti-gay discrimination and gives extra protection for anti-gay discrimination. Now, if I'm not mistaken, it used to be that Mississippi already didn't have gay people as a protected class, which is a problem. So they kind of already could get away with it, but it was up in the air as to the legality of the situation. But now they're writing into the law books, no, if you want to say fuck you to gays, you can say that. So if a gay person comes into a store, hey, I don't like you, I don't like your kind, you can get out of here. If, you're gay and you're working for an employer who finds out you're gay and they're anti-gay, they could say, I'm not comfortable around you, I'm going to fire you solely based on, you know, your identity, who you are, your sexuality. Sorry, I'm gonna fire you based on that. So this is grotesque, but I want everybody to do the important intellectual exercise here to find out just how grotesque this really is. Now, because we've lived in a society and in a country that's allowed this kind of discrimination for so long, I feel like many of us are just desensitized to it, where it's like, that's fucked up, but, you know, do we really get how fucked up it is and how future generations will look back? Well, again, very simple intellectual exercise. Being a gay person is something that the person can't help. They're just who they're attracted to sexually. Just is what it is. You know what else is something you can't help? Race. So imagine in Mississippi today, there was a law that was passed, said, yeah, civil rights laws, forget it, push that aside. Here's the reality of what we're going to do. We're going to put into law extra protections for business owners who want to discriminate against black people. So if you walk into a diner, the owner of the diner can say, we don't like your kind around here, get out. You try to sit at the counter with the white people, we don't have your kind at the same counter. Either get out of the store, or here's a separate counter we set up for you. How about, hey, we don't hire y'all kind around here neither. Get out if a black person needs a job. And all, think of the practical implications of this, too. Like, I've given this example before, but whether it's a gay person, a black person, or whatever, any minority that's, you know, traditionally discriminated against, imagine they run out of gas in the middle of a family trip in the middle of Mississippi. There's no places around to get gas and no service stations, no places to get food or anything. They're out there for a day. They walk a long mile to the nearest gas station, and then they get in there, we don't serve your kind. Our car's dead on the side of the road. We haven't had anything to eat in a long time. You got to help us. We don't serve your kind. Get out. These are the practical implications of this deep, deep bigotry and hatred and intolerance. No, it's not acceptable. No, it's not okay. It's bullshit. This is exactly why we need protected classes. So as of right now, because of the Civil Rights Act and many other laws, you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to kick somebody out solely because of race or religion, for example. You're not allowed to be discriminatory solely based on those things. Guys, gay people at a federal level are not in that protected class. How crazy is that? Because in over 20 states around the country, they can fire you simply because you're gay. They can kick you out of their place of business, if it's a restaurant or whatever, simply because you're gay. The idea that the fight for equality for the LGBT community is done is nonsense. So yeah, the Supreme Court ruled there's a right to get married. We're now interpreting equal protection under the law to include gay people and right to get married. Great. Love that. 100% in favor of it. But we still don't have anti-discrimination protections for gays in the U.S. at the federal level, which we need to make these state laws null and void. And also, I haven't even gotten into world issues where in many countries it's legal to put gay people to death. In over 80 countries, it's illegal to be gay. They'll just lock you up if you're gay. No, there's still a necessary and important movement that we have to fight here, and we have to win on this front because this is unacceptable. This is fucking embarrassing. Mississippi should be embarrassed by this garbage. Imagine it was black people. Imagine it was black people. Imagine it was Jews. Imagine it was any other minority group. How would we feel if that was the case? Imagine they did this law about Christians. Now, obviously, they'd never in Mississippi, but just do the thought exercise. Outrage, everyone, anti-Christian bigotry. But when they do it against gays, what do you mean? We're used to being dicks to gay people, so why? Let's just continue being massive pricks to them. And it's cool, because religion. And that's the thing, they're hiding behind religion here. They say, my religion gives me the right to take away your rights. No, it fucking doesn't. So take that ridiculous reasoning for a hike, because rational people in a secular country understand what the right thing to do is here, and it ain't what you're doing. Okay. Let's go to the anti-marijuana hearing that happened in Washington. So there was an anti-marijuana hearing held in Washington. Apparently some congressmen on a subcommittee are angry that the federal government isn't enforcing the marijuana laws in Colorado. They want the federal laws enforced in Colorado. So Huffington Post reports here, Senator Jeff Sessions lamented Colorado's legalization of recreational pot, arguing the state had led the march toward national acceptance of pro-marijuana policies. He praised past prevention efforts, such as Nancy Reagan's Just Say No campaign, arguing the federal government once sent a message that, and I quote, good people don't smoke marijuana. We need grown-ups in charge in Washington to say marijuana is not the kind of thing that ought to be legalized, that it's, in fact, a very real danger. Okay. There's so much to say about this here, but first of all, isn't it hilarious that the same people that bitch and moan about the nanny state, big government liberals want the nanny state to take care of you, and we want small government and freedom and liberty. Those people, when it comes to marijuana, all of a sudden, he said it right here, we need grown-ups in charge in Washington to say marijuana is not the kind of thing that ought to be legalized. What happened, Mr. Anti-Nanny State? What happened, Mr. I'm against big government? Now he's like, oh, big government to control marijuana use. and lock up black people. I mean, what did I say? Lock up criminals. Yeah. I love that. I love that kind of big government. I love it when the nanny state tells you what you can and cannot put in your body. But at the same time that I love that, I'm going to be an idiot and contradict myself and pretend I love freedom and liberty. No, you don't. Those words have a meaning. Okay? And if you actually believe in the concepts and the ideas behind it, well, you should be in favor of legalizing marijuana. You should be in favor of legalizing, taxing, and regulating all drugs. But you're not, because, again, you're a giant fucking hypocrite. But furthermore, look, he said it right here. Quote, good people don't smoke marijuana. No, but this is the old kind of black and white, draconian, old school morality that young, intelligent people today laugh at. Like, Jeff Sessions doesn't get this, but Jeff, we think you're an idiot. Like, I know that I'm being a dick here, but it's true. We think you're a moron. Why? Because this is what, in his mind, morality, like, that's the dividing line. Like, those who smoke weed and those who don't smoke weed, the ones who don't is good people. The ones who do is bad people. That's his moral analysis. This is coming from a guy who voted for the Iraq War and the Patriot Act. No, that's what makes you a bad person. You voted for a war which cost $7 trillion and killed minimum 200,000 civilians in the Middle East. You voted for a piece of legislation that throws in the garbage our Constitution. No more due process, no more habeas corpus, no more protection from unreasonable search and seizure, no more protection from cruel and unusual punishment. So you destroy our Constitution, you vote for an unnecessary war that slaughters civilians, and then you turn around and morally judge people that want to get high a little bit. Fuck off. They're just wrong. They're just wrong. And this is also the same kind of person that discriminates against gays and doesn't want to give them equal rights. You're the moral cretin. You're the bad person. I'm going to impose my will on the gays and not let them live happy lives together because I disagree with them, but the people who smoke weed are bad people. No, you're a bad person. You're a bad person. And I don't know why he's a bad person. Was he brainwashed from when he was a kid into this bullshit ideology? Maybe. Did he actively make a choice even though he thought about it? Maybe. I don't know. But either way, the consequences of your actions are shitty. You're the bad person. It ain't us. And that's the thing, is they look at, like, substance taking as, well, that there's a moral dimension to that. What are you talking about? And would he ever make this judgment of people that drink? Alcohol is way more dangerous than marijuana. I'm sure he drinks alcohol. Does that mean you're a bad person? You ain't no good person, Jeff Sessions? Fuck you. Like, would you look at somebody who takes, you know, Vicodin after they get into a car accident and their femur snaps? Bad person, you done took a substance. Somebody who takes Xanax because they have severe anxiety or antidepressants because they're depressed. Is that a bad person? Is it a bad person to drink a Red Bull before you play a round of golf because you're tired because you didn't sleep much the night before? Is that a bad person? Is that a bad person to have a beer? Bad person to have tequila? No, but marijuana, ooh, bad person. And remember, the drug war disproportionately targets black people. That's a fact. Now, my opinion, it's a fact. Black people, white people use drugs at similar rates. Black people get arrested for it 4 times more often. White people more likely to sell drugs, less likely to get arrested for selling drugs. Is that part of what goes into his analysis? Maybe. I don't know. Maybe he thinks, well, you know, that drug is one used by the undesirables. So there's a moral angle to that one. There's a moral aspect to that one. He's a bad person, man. That's all I have to say about this. And you could take your old school bullshit morality, good people don't smoke marijuana, and shove it up your ass, because that's apparently where your brain is, too. Okay. All right, let me try to squeeze in one or two more here, see how far we get. We have a disastrous story coming out of Tennessee to report to you. The Tennessean says, Tennessee is poised to make history as the first state in the nation to recognize the Holy Bible as its official book. After nearly 30 minutes of debate, the state Senate on Monday approved the measure sponsored by Senator Steve Sutherland, Republican of Morristown, with a 19-8 vote, sending the legislation to Governor Bill Haslam's desk. Okay, now, there's so much to say about this. First of all, coming from the same people who always say about the Constitution, it's not debatable, man, it's set in stone, you gotta be an originalist, you gotta be a literalist about the Constitution, so it's not debatable, let's get that over with now. They say that all the time when it comes to the Second Amendment. By the way, they don't even understand the Second Amendment, they don't know the history of it, they don't know the literal text of it, but they think they're, oh, no, but it's not debatable, guns for everybody, everywhere, guns, guns, guns. So all the time, Second Amendment, Constitution, shut the fuck up, Constitution is the trump card. Constitution, Constitution. Fascinating. The Constitution is 1,000,000% against what you just did here. The whole idea of the United States Constitution is secularism. They don't know anything about our country. They know nothing about our country. Read the Constitution. How many times does it bring up the Bible? Zero. How many times does it bring up God? Zero. How many times does it bring up Jesus? Zero. How many times does it bring up religion? Once. And what do they say when they bring it up? You shall not establish a religion. This was the first official secular nation in the world. And they flipped it on its head to pretend like they're more in line with the Constitution as they do something that is fundamentally opposed to the Constitution. What a joke. And then also, this is the same crowd, the same group of people. Every 3 minutes, Sharia law is about to come to Tennessee. We got to pass a bill to get the Sharia out of here. So they're doing these anti-Sharia laws in Oklahoma and all these places in the Midwest and the South, because obviously the Muslim Brotherhood is on the verge of taking over in those places, for those of you who don't know. So they do these anti-Sharia laws, then they turn around, and sometimes on the same day, this was, I think, for Oklahoma, on the same day they pass an anti-Sharia measure and a measure that said the Bible can be used in science class. It's the same thing here. We're against religious law, got to get Sharia law out of here. Hey, by the way, let's pass that bill that says the Bible's the official state book. But that you don't see the contradiction? You don't see the problem there? Their Sharia is banned. Our Sharia is mandatory. Thank you very much. No, take all of your religious law and shove it up your ass. This is a secular nation. The whole point of the nation is to be secular. But see, in their mind, they view it as it's persecution and oppression against them if you tell them we need to have secularism, which is state neutrality on the issue of religion. So they say, unless you let us make our religion the official state book and shove our religion and our holy book down your throat, well, then you're a bigot. It's exactly the arguments that are made by Islamists in countries that have Islamic governments, where they run everything. The far-right Islamists run everything, and then when somebody says, hey, you know, maybe we shouldn't persecute gays, they say, oh my God, you're persecuting me by not letting me persecute gays. These are some of the dumbest people on the fucking planet, man. I'm so sick of it. I'm so sick of it. How do you not realize this is the most brazenly unconstitutional thing in the world? Well, obviously not in the world. The Constitution only applies to America. This is the most brazenly unconstitutional thing in the U.S. that you could possibly do. Make a state book a holy book. That obviously puts one religion over another religion and says we prefer this religion, this is our state religion. You cannot do that. That's the point of the Constitution. Again, take this bill, shove it up your ass. I hope there's federal lawsuits coming against you here and coming at you at 1,000,000 miles an hour from the ACLU, from the Freedom from Religion Foundation, from others, because this is an abomination. This is egregious to do in our country. Okay. I'm out of time, guys. I wanted to squeeze in this Glenn Beck story, but I can't. Okay. So, everybody, enjoy the rest of your day. I know you all feel kind of high off that Bernie Sanders win. Awesome. I hear you. And that's that. So come back tomorrow, same time, same place. Have a bunch of awesome stories for you. As usual, much love. Peace.